This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
What's next?
And good afternoon once again, everyone. My name is Scott Moore. I'm from the Spartan Sports Network, and I'm happy to be here filling in for Earl Robinson once again today on Sports Talk 870. We'll be taking your calls and questions along the way, and we've got a couple of special guests that will be set to join us. In about 15 minutes, we'll check in with Steve Piotrowski. He is the supervisor of officials for the Central Collegiate Hockey Association, and he is also the editor of the College Hockey Rulebook. And this is a new rules year, so we'll talk with him about what we might expect to see. Nothing is in stone yet as far as the new rules and rule adjustments for the coming two seasons, but we'll pick his brain a little bit and see what we might see that's different on the ice during college hockey season this coming up year, the final year of CCHA play, as Michigan State and five other teams will be joining the Big Ten for the 2013-14 season. Also this afternoon, coming up a little bit later on in the show, we'll check in with Robert Huntoon. If that name doesn't sound familiar, well, he is the owner and general manager of the Capital City Stealth. And this is a football team that plays during the summers at Sexton High School. It's all they volunteer their time. They're not paid for their play. So I doubt that there's many bounties going on with the Capital City Stealth. But we'll check in with him, get a little bit of background on the team. They are right in their non-conference part of the season here, and they start their conference play in the Great Lakes Football League right after Memorial Day. So we'll check in with Robert Huntoon later on in the show. But for right now, we are open line. The phone number here at Sports Talk 870 is 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR if you have a phone that has letters with the numbers. I know that was always a real source of consternation for me when I had a BlackBerry, because there were no numbers or no letters with the numbers on the phone. So WKAR meant absolutely nothing to me. Or you can call us toll-free, 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. Went through some of the sports headlines getting ready for the show today, and to start things off, I have one thing to say. Josh Hamilton is good at baseball. This guy is something else. Did you hear about what he did last night? Josh Hamilton, the outfielder for the Texas Rangers, went 5-for-5 last night. And if you had him on your fantasy team and he was active last night, you are singing his praises big time. 5-for-5 with 4 home runs and a double, a total of 18 bases. And it was a total of 8 runs batted in, because each of his 4 home runs was a 2-run shot. It was kind of slacking there in the middle in the 5th inning when he only got the double, and I think some of his teammates were kind of joking with him about that. But 4 home runs in a game, he becomes, I believe, just the 16th player in Major League history to hit 4 home runs in a single game. And some of the other names on the list, Lou Gehrig is on that list, so you know, he's pretty good. Michael Jack Schmidt from the Philadelphia Phillies of old. So there's a couple of pretty good hitters that he has joined on that list. 5 of the 16 now that have done it are in the Hall of Fame. Only 5 of the 16, so it's not a guarantee of total fame, but he will step into the American League record book, not only for having 4 home runs in a game, a mark that he ties as the best in a game, but he also, with those 18 total bases in a game, that sets the record in the American League. No player in the history of the American League has ever gained a total of 18 bases in one game, and certainly in a 1 9-inning game. So that begs the question. It was an interesting quote that I heard on TV today from Tim Kirkjian from ESPN. He says that that was the greatest game in the history of the American League. That's saying an awful lot, and I'm not sure that I agree with Tim Kirkjian on that. I want to know how you feel about it. Four home runs in a game is a wild accomplishment, that's for sure, but was that the greatest game in the history of the American League? You can call us up at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-952-7870. And air your opinion. Was that the greatest game in the history of the American League? Or, you know, how about this? What's better, a four-home run game, a perfect game, or a triple play in a game? You don't see any of them very often. And this is, by the way, the first season in the history of Major League Baseball that they've had both a four-home run game and a perfect game in the same season. So that's how rare those two events are. But what's better? What, in your mind, what's the greater accomplishment? Four home runs in a game, a perfect game, or a team that completes a triple play? Three outs out of the inning on one swing of the bat. So give us a call at 355-9527. Some of the other things that caught my eye, you know, we talked with Jake Boss, the head coach of Michigan State's baseball team yesterday as they were in Kalamazoo to take on Western Michigan. And I remember one of the things we talked about was the fact that his team is not afraid to swing the bats. They're not afraid, and they're pretty good at putting the bat on the ball. Well, yesterday, in the first five innings of that game between Michigan State and Western Michigan, 22 total base hits in five innings. Michigan State goes on to beat the Broncos of Western Michigan University 15-7 in Kalamazoo yesterday. They'll turn around and they will take the diamond at McLean Baseball Stadium right here on the campus of Michigan State University at 3:05 this afternoon, taking on another team from the Mid-American Conference. And this one's a pretty good team. The Rockets of Toledo will be in town for a contest against Michigan State. The Rockets leading the MAC as they head towards their postseason tournament, although they are kind of stinging as they lost a weekend series against Buffalo this past weekend. So this is a Rocket team that will be motivated to score some runs and try to win this game this afternoon against Michigan State, a team that seems to be rounding into pretty good form at the right time of the year. There's more home action for Michigan State, as we talked about yesterday. After this game against Toledo today, they'll take a whole day off tomorrow and then get right back into action with three games in 3 days, conference action at McLean Stadium against the Hawkeyes of Iowa. Game on Friday at 3:05, and then Saturday and Sunday at 1:05 each day. Then on Tuesday, they'll face Central Michigan University in the Clash at Comerica, downtown Detroit. And then it's back home for the final three games of the regular season in the Big Ten, taking on Penn State Thursday and Friday at 3:05 and Saturday at noon over at McLean Stadium. So head on over and check out Jake Boss and his Spartan baseball team. They're starting to play some pretty good ball here down the stretch, and cheer them on as they try to finish as high as possible in the Big Ten standings. Remember, in the Big Ten postseason tournament that'll be played in Columbus, Ohio in a couple of weeks, the top two teams get byes in the first round. So Michigan State tied for third. I believe it's a three-way tie for third in the conference, and very close to the second place team in the conference there. So, you know, they can certainly, if they finish strong and pick up a few wins over these last 2 weeks of conference play, there's a chance that they could wind up in that second place spot and get that first round bye in the tournament. It's a double elimination tournament, but not having to play that first day gives you a bit of an advantage. A couple other things that I noticed, we'll stick with baseball for a moment. And this is one thing that a couple of my friends got into it on Facebook earlier today on it. Brandon Inge, formerly of the Tigers, you know, longtime Detroit Tiger, got cut loose earlier this season. The fans were just screaming and screaming and screaming that the Tigers needed to get rid of Brandon Inge because, honestly, he was not getting it done at the plate. Batting average was right around 100, well below that Mendoza line that they talk about, and things had not been going well for Brandon for the last couple of years. So the Tigers gave him a few shots, gave him a chance to get out there on the diamond, and it didn't turn around for him. They cut him loose, and he was picked up by the Oakland Athletics last night, his first game in Oakland. He joined the team on the road and played six games for Oakland before they played a home game out at the Alameda County Coliseum. It used to be called, I forget what their stadium is known as now, but his first game at home last night. Had an 0-for evening until he came up in the bottom of the ninth with the bases loaded, and he jacked one into the stands in left field, a walk-off grand slam for Brandon Inge as the Oakland A's came from behind to beat Toronto 7-3 last night. Toronto, by the way, had taken a 3-2 lead in that game. Late in the contest, or had tied it up at least 3-3, and then they had the walk-off grand slam by Brandon Inge. So congratulations to Brandon Inge. You know, he was one of those players that I always loved the way he played defense and really did not like what he did at the plate. You know, when he was playing third base for the Tigers, a human vacuum cleaner over there at third base, the throws to first were almost always on target and always strong. You know, I just loved the way that he wasn't afraid to get dirty and get in there and make the gritty plays that he made at third base. And then he'd come to the plate and you just would kind of cringe because he was always hovering right around that 250, maybe even lower area. And, you know, if he'd have been able to be even a 275 hitter with the type of defense he played, things would have been much, much different. And the fans in Detroit always really embraced Brandon Inge because he'd been there through the bad days and he hung around and kept a great face, and he was kind of the face of the franchise until Justin Verlander started to get himself into there, and then, you know, of course you had Miguel Cabrera comes in and all the others, but so Brandon Inge was just, he was a good soldier for the Tigers for so many years. When he left with class, and now he's having a modicum of success. The last seven games that he's played with Oakland, his batting average is up in the 200s. It's not great. He's not setting the world on fire, but he does have a home run in back-to-back games, and he has a hit in four of his last five games with the Oakland A's. So things going much better for Brandon Inge out in Oakland, California, and a lot of times you see that happening with baseball players and with athletes of any type. If they're struggling in one surrounding, sometimes a new point of view and a new team can do wonders. And he seems to be really enjoying himself as a member of the Oakland A's. The other thing that caught my eye today as far as the world of sports is concerned is Chris Carter. In an interview last night with ESPN Radio, Chris Carter admitted that he too had put bounties on defensive players while he was playing. But a little bit different situation than what we had with the New Orleans Saints. Chris Carter said that if he had heard, like one situation that he mentioned in particular was that Bill Romanowski, who was playing for the Denver Broncos at the time, he says... He looked at Chris Carter and he told him, "I'm coming after you today. I'm coming to get you." And so Chris Carter went back to his offensive line mates and said, "I'm putting a bounty on his head. Anybody who protects me, the amounts are nowhere near the $10,000 that Jonathan Vilma had talked about, but it's a little bit different situation. We can talk about that if that's something that you want to bring up. Again, our phone numbers here are 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR, or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. And we'll have more sports talk, and we'll talk with Steve Piotrowski from the CCHA in just a moment, right after this short break on AM 870.
The president makes it official. He's running. And the vice president runs off script on gay marriage, which is on the ballot in several states this year, including Tuesday in North Carolina. Ron Paul picks up Maine, and Romney says, no, the president should not be tried for treason. I'm Neil Conan, Political Junkie Day, Ken Rudin joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 right here on AM 870.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm Scott Pohl. Here's the weather forecast. Mostly cloudy today. We could get some rain and scattered thunderstorms with a high of 60 degrees. Clearing up for the overnight hours, a low of 39, mostly sunny and 65 for a high tomorrow, sunny and 71 the high Friday.
Thank you very much for that information, Scott Pohl, and welcome back to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. I'm Scott Moore from the Spartan Sports Network, and I'm happy to welcome Steve Piotrowski to the phones right now. Steve is the supervisor of officials for the CCHA and the editor of the NCAA rules book. And Steve, thanks for taking a little bit of time out of your busy day to chat with us this afternoon.
My pleasure, Scott. It's always great to talk with you, and happy to spend some time with you this afternoon.
Well, as we I mentioned earlier in the show, that the NCAA rule book is published every other season, and this is one of the seasons that it will be published. So we will see some new rules, or we could see some new rules. I understand nothing has been decided yet, but what they just had a rules committee meeting a couple of weeks ago in Florida at the Hockey Coaches Association meetings. What were some of the topics that were brought up at that rules committee meeting?
Well, Scott, you are correct. The NCAA has a two-year rules process, and we've just completed the final year. And the rules committee always looks at developing rules and implementing rules that certainly take into consideration the safety, the skill, the speed, and the scoring aspects of our great game of college hockey. The meeting that you're referring to was an informal meeting with the rules committee that took place at the coaches' convention, which takes place annually in Naples. And prior to the meeting, it's important that the rules committee get a sense and a feel from the coaches nationally, their opinions about various rules that are being proposed, future considerations, that type of thing. So there is a survey that's sent out. We compile the initial results of those surveys, share them with the coaching body at the discussions, and then we resurvey the group following the coaches' convention to get a little bit more firmer hand on what their thoughts and conclusions are. And then the rules committee meets formally in June of this year. And at that time, there'll be a number of rules considered for either modification, new implementation, housekeeping items. I don't anticipate the docket will be very large, and I'll mention just a few of the things that will be on the docket for discussion. The rules committee will then make proposals, and then those proposals will then go to the safeguards committee for final approval and implementation. And the safeguards committee will look at, you know, safety issues and integrity issues of the sport, economic issues that surround any of the rule changes, and then once they pass their hand over it, then those rules will become part of our formal process.
I know one of the things that I keep seeing brought up on college hockey websites is the possibility that they'll scrap the full cage on the helmets and go to a half visor or a three quarter visor situation. What are your thoughts on that? There are a couple of different schools of thought on it as to why it would be better to go that way. What's your thought on it?
Well, there's been some very robust discussions and probably almost unanimous support across the coaching body regarding going to a three-quarter visor. There is certainly a dichotomy that exists when trying to convince people who are familiar with our sport that removing a piece of equipment can actually enhance safety. So We've had some very good discussions over the last year involving a number of coaches, including Tom Anastas and Jack Parker, some physicians who are very closely tied into research on concussions, among other members of this subcommittee that was put together to meet in December. So we've got a substantial amount of data that the rules committee can digest through and then put together what would hope to be a proposal that could go then for final approval to the Safeguards Committee. So it's a lot further than it has been. It's certainly definitely miles away from getting approved, but at least it's something that will be on the docket for discussions and then hopefully made for consideration. So again, coaches support it. The rules committee has even surveyed the players, and players even support going to the three-quarter visor. So if that is approved, certainly there would have to be some modifications to the current rule, which would require the visors to be worn a certain way and not be able to tip them up without penalty, and then must a much more stricter enforcement and adherence to the mouth guard rule. So there's, again, it's discussion, it's in a positive way, and we'll have to wait until June to see on how those discussions go.
You know, one of the reasons that I've heard for moving in that direction, first and foremost, college hockey is the only level, really, anywhere around that age group that has the full shield requirement. The juniors, the USHL, the NAHL are all on half shields. The pro leagues are all on either half shields or no shields. But the thing that I had always heard is that with that full shield, maybe players feel a little more invulnerable, and there's more of a tendency to go high with the hits, and that's one of the things that we're trying to get rid of, are the contact to the head penalties.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some argument that way, that the invincible feeling of a player because they are fully covered in their face makes them play a different way. There's also argument with regard to the way players play against an opponent with more respect factors. And there's also some discussion and argument about visual enhancement, not having a full cage or mask, which would restrict peripheral vision and perimeter vision, and allowing players to have a better sense and a feel for where they are on the ice. So, there are a number of reasons, again, that consideration is being given to, the potential of bringing this back into a game. But, again, there's a dichotomy of discussions as it relates to convincing people that by removing a piece of equipment that actually enhances safety, that truly is safer for the game. So, again, hopefully things will go forward in a very favorable way, but we certainly have to wait until June for that to come forward.
We're talking with Steve Piotrowski, the supervisor of officials for the CCHA, about what we might see new in the NCAA rules for the upcoming season. Another thing that you and I, Steve, have had many conversations about is the whole situation with the net coming off of the ice as a goal is coming in. And as things are written right now, once that net comes up off of its pins or loses contact from the ice, if that's the case, when the puck crosses the goal line, it's no goal. But there's a chance that there may be some movement on that as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I'm certainly a big advocate of this rule change, as many coaches are, because there are far too many rules right now in our book that find ways to not count goals, and we have to make sure. Again, there are ways through rules and through fairness that goals are counted. In many cases, as you've mentioned, the goal frame becomes dislodged by actions of the defensive team. And if a potential goal is scored under our current rules, if that net is not flat on the ice completely at the time the puck crosses the goal line, that goal cannot count. And so the committee wants to look at rules that can allow more goals in those types of situations and allow play to continue when the goal returns to its proper position. So one of the discussion items in situationals that certainly will be discussed with, if the net, let's say and you guys had an example of that in the regional play this year out in, I think it was Bridgeport, where a defensive player backed up into the crossbar. The net came up, it still stayed on the pegs, and then the puck entered the net. In that kind of situation, this proposed change could could allow a goal like that to count because it was the net was still affixed to the pegs. So we're looking at a couple of other different situations where nets are accidentally dislodged by the defensive team, and look at ways to find a way to make that kind of goal count and be acceptable under the terms of our rules.
Steve, every year it seems like, or every other year, there are rule change propositions that aren't instituted but are made available, so to speak, for different conferences to try in their exhibition games. Is there anything that falls under that category that you can think of that we might be looking at as a permanent change in this rule book cycle?
Well, as far as experimental rules, there's really nothing that has surfaced this year. I mean, we're working very, very closely with the National Hockey League and their R&D camp that they have every summer in the Toronto area. And there's a number of things that actually the National League has incorporated or considering incorporating from our rules, like our hybrid icing rule and our center red line, which they've incorporated into their rule. But the future considerations, I mean, one of the topics, I'll just give you an example of some of the topics that were discussed as a consideration item would be hand passes. You know, one of the things that is a great dilemma is that, you know, you're allowing a team to allow the play to continue because they hand pass in their defensive zone. And that rule was changed a number of years ago because the defensive team, when they were tired and stalled and couldn't get the puck out of their end, they were just hand passing the puck to get the whistle and then kill the play and allow to change their line. So bringing in a rule that would permit only in the defensive zone a hand pass seems to be a little, again, not consistent with what we want to try to apply to the game. So one of the things that is discussed and has been discussed is allowing hand passes anywhere on the ice. If you're going to do in the defensive zone, should you allow it anywhere on the ice? So offensive zone, defensive zone, neutral zone, or not permit it whatsoever?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the consideration items. Another consideration item was eliminating the neutral zone faceoff dots. So
okay.
the two dots outside each blue line would be eliminated, and any neutral zone faceoff would take place at center ice. And the theory behind that would be to better administer the faceoff and allow for more strategic play because you would have controlled lines and circles that would keep the players back. Because there's a lot of cheating that takes place, unfortunately, in the neutral zone because mm-hmm. there are no markings on the ice that restrict movement. So that's another consideration. But one area, Scott, I do want to mention to you that has got a lot of support from the coaches is pucks off skates. And I think the movement here is, you know, giving more clarity, but allowing now an opportunity for the team that scores the goal rather than under our current rule, which states that a puck can only be scored off a skate if it's a deflection.
Mm-hmm.
But now allowing the direction off the skate. And the exception to that would be anything that was a kicking motion would not be permitted.
It always comes back to that distinct kicking motion, doesn't it?
Exactly. So I think personally it's a lot easier for an official to determine if a player actually kicked the puck and there is a distinct kicking motion than it is to tell if a player actually directed the puck by means of turning or angling their skate in such a way that it changes the path and flight of the puck to enter the net. So, you know, there's argument that says that's an athletic move. Again, this would be another rule that would allow us to have an opportunity to count more goals, with the exception of actually kicking a puck in the net.
One thing that has come up kind of in jest during our talk show that I do on a weekly basis with Tom Anastas is having a coach's challenge for replay. as they do in both college football and in pro football. As I said, I've jokingly said, would you like to have something to throw at officials from the bench? but has there ever been any discussion about adding that element to the replay? Now that everybody has replay, of having a coach have the ability to say, hey, I'd like you to take a look at that.
Yeah, there's been no discussion on that, but there is as an example in the tournament there is a rule that allows for coaches to take a timeout in an effort to request the video review of a goal situation. So during the regular season, you know, our officials not only in our league but nationally, they're going to take the opportunity to make sure that they get the call right, and they don't want to cause any undue delays. But if there's a reason or a suspicion to feel that, hey, maybe there's an undetected goal, they're going to take the opportunity to go into replay and take a quick look at that and allow that review to take place, so they have assurances that, you know, there was nothing there, or you know, there's something that was undetected on the ice, and now there's conclusive video evidence to support an overturning of the on-ice call, which in that situation would have been no goal because it was undetected.
And if I understand correctly, Steve, right now, if there is a stoppage of play and a coach mentions something to an official, it's not mandatory. The official doesn't have to, but if the official says, well, you know what, you have a point, it's up to his discretion as to whether he wants to go and take a look at it again, right?
Correct. So there may be some dialogue and discussion regarding allowing a timeout to be used during the regular season, because it's only permitted during the tournament.
Before I let you go, Steve, I know you are used to looking at these games from a straight down the middle type point of view. You're not rooting for one team or the other, but I would imagine that during that NCAA championship game with your alma mater, Ferris State, taking part in their first NCAA final, there had to be a little bit of pride in your belly on that one.
Well, yeah, I mean I'd be a liar if I told you any differently. I mean, I certainly have to maintain a non-biased, certainly neutral perspective on that. But I was pleased as an alumnus and pleased to see that a program that has been in place could have some success. And it was nice to see for another small program as well, like Union College, to be able to get through and allow a tournament berth. So it was very exciting for, I think, the fans to see that, you know, there were other teams involved that are of a smaller school stature, again, have some success, at the national level and the national stage, kind of very similar to what the Butlers a couple of years ago in the Final Four in basketball. So, yeah, I was happy for them, but you got to give credit to all four teams that were there, and certainly credit to Boston College. They have an outstanding team and played very well in the championship game.
Very definitely. Well, Steve, again, thanks for taking some time to join us and talk about NCAA hockey rules today.
My pleasure, Scott. You take care. Have a great one.
All right, you too. That's Steve Piotrowski, the CCHA Supervisor of Officials, and it'll be October before we all know it. We're going to take another quick break here and come back and talk with Robert Huntoon from the Capital City Stealth when we return with more after this short break right here on WKAR AM 870.
The fall of Muammar Gaddafi's regime in Libya was hailed as one of the great successes of the Arab Spring, but what's happened since to divided tribes, stockpiles of advanced weapons, and now displaced mercenaries? I'm Neil Conan. The ripples from Libya's revolution, plus the sailor who just circumnavigated the Americas. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR Radio.
It'll be mostly cloudy today. Rain and scattered thunderstorms are possible. The high will be 60 degrees. Clearing with an overnight low of 39 tonight. Thursday will be mostly sunny. A little warmer, too, with a high of 65. Friday, warmer still, sunny and a high of 71. I'm Scott Pohl.
And welcome back once again to AM 870 Sports Talk. Scott Moore filling in for Earl Robinson. Rico Cooney will be in the chair tomorrow from 1 to 2 p.m. And we ask you to join him as well. But now we've got it's 1:40 in the capital city, and it's time to switch from hockey to football. And we're joined now by Robert Huntoon from the capital city Stealth. And a lot of people haven't heard of the Capital City Stealth. It's relatively new. Robert, where did the idea of starting a volunteer football team come from?
How are you doing, Scott? Back in 2004, 2005, I was actually approached to help form a team in Albion, Michigan, and was the assistant GM, assistant head coach, and player for 2 years there. When that team went to Arena the following year, took a couple years off and was approached to then be a general manager for a team out of Ypsilanti. And as that season went on, I decided to do something closer to home. So in 2009, I formed the Capsule Stealth. In 2010, we launched our season in Lansing.
Now, you play in the Great Lakes Football League. How long has the Great Lakes Football League been around? Is that where the team in Albion and all that, is that where they played?
Albion was an independent team for the 2 years they were around. The Great Lakes Football League has been around for, I believe, six, seven years.
Okay.
There's been several different leagues in Michigan, but that's one of two right now.
Okay, and these are all guys that just play because they love playing football.
Most of them play for the love of the game, but a lot of them want to get into college or get to the next level, whether it's CFL, NFL, Arena League. And our goal is to teach them up, let them play some games, get some film that they can send out to different teams and get scouted.
Do you get many instances where scouts come and watch the games live, or is it more that these guys are sending tapes out?
A lot of guys are sending out tapes. We've had scouts come to a few select games in the 2 years we've been around. So, and the more we're around, the more we get, you know, interest in scouts wanting to come.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is that you're in your preseason right now up until Memorial Day, and then the regular season starts. Is this a time that you're making roster decisions, or is it pretty much y'all come? If you show up for practice, we're going to give you a uniform, and you've got a chance to earn playing time.
Well, throughout the early stages of putting the team together for this year, we had about 120 guys sign up. Up until about a month ago, we had about 95 guys. We're down to 81 right now. By July 7th, we have to cut to 60. So right now, we are carrying about, like I said, 80 guys, and they're all fighting for a chance to make the main team once we go to our cuts.
Are your player base, is it mostly guys that played high school and maybe some college, or is it guys that played small college? What's the average experience level?
Just about everybody's played high school ball. There's a handful who played college. There's quite a few who've actually played semi-pro with other teams. And putting this team together in Lansing, what it's helped do for guys who live in Lansing is now they can play locally instead of having to travel to Flint, Grand Rapids, mm-hmm. Battle Creek to play. So, it helps them out there. But most of the guys have some experience at one of the different levels. But actually, our goal is to get them to whatever level they want to get to.
Now, if somebody were listening to this interview and they're thinking, well, you know, that'd be kind of interesting. I'd be interested in trying out for that team. What's the process like? How would somebody go about contacting you and starting that process?
Well, at this point, obviously, with preseason starting, we're not accepting any more players. But the best thing I would say to them is come out. Follow us during the season, follow our website, our Facebook page, and then come November, we'll start posting our tryout information, which will probably start in December again. And that's when they would come out and start doing some of the little mini camps with us, getting familiar with the players, the coaches, and see if it's really something that's for them.
We're talking with Robert Huntoon, the general manager of the Capital City Stealth. You folks play your home games at Sexton High School at Majeski Stadium, but I noticed looking at your website, the preseason games, you've got some in Charlotte and one a big game coming up this weekend down in Olivet.
Yes. When we secured Sexton High School for our games, they weren't able to accommodate us with preseason, so what we thought would be fun was to do what the Tigers do and take it out of the area to play elsewhere, and Charlotte and Olivet were more willing to have us come down. They're not far from each other. So for us to promote three games in Eaton County, you know, made sense to us. So for this year, we moved our preseason there. And as you mentioned, we do have a big event this weekend. It's our third annual breast cancer awareness game. It's at Olivet College. We have two semi-pro games going on with a powder puff game in between.
Oh, okay. So you've got two or three other teams from your league coming in for an exhibition game, plus a powder puff game. Who's playing in the powder puff game?
It's one of the teams is going to be girlfriends or wives of some of our players. And the other team is a team out of Jackson. Both teams played each other our first year when we did our breast cancer event. Last year we didn't have the game due to the weather, but this year, you know, we brought it back. Year one, it was a 6-6 tie, so right now they're trying to fight to see who's going to actually come out a winner this time.
Okay.
So it should be a good game to see. As far as the teams playing in the semi-pro games, in the first game, it's the Battle Creek Blaze versus the Detroit Diesels, and the Diesels are part of the GLFL. The Blaze are not. They were last year, but they went to a different league. And we'll take on the Grand Rapids Thunder, who are also in a different league. So there's actually going to be three different leagues represented in our game.
Okay, and I noticed that in addition to the team, you also have a cheer squad as well for the stealth.
Yes, we have the bomb squad. Yes,
the bomb squad, and I would imagine that the tryout process is the same. It works the same way as for the players. You got to start that process a little bit earlier, but details are available on the website.
Yeah, we'll have it on the website. I think they're set with girls for now. I think there's 13 or 14 girls, which is about what they wanted for the year. But I know they're always looking for girls, and they may add more. I'm not sure. I haven't talked to our cheer coach as of late and where they were as far as wanting more girls or not. But we do have a good group of girls. They did a few routines last Saturday at the game we had in Charlotte, and they looked great. The fans loved them, and it's just something we felt we needed to have with our team to kind of make it.
What is a game day experience at a Capital City Stealth game like? I mean, you know, we're used to the high school games with a band and the college games and all that. What's a game day experience at your level like?
We don't have a band. We've tried getting bands, but what we do have is we have a DJ who will play music prior to the game starting, so there's, you know, there's no dead time, so to speak, and he'll play random stuff throughout the game. But It's nice for fans because they can get up close and personal with the players and the cheerleaders. You know, anytime they want to talk to them, say hi, shake your hand, greet them, get an autograph, they'll do it. You know, they want to reach out to the community and invite them to become in part of the team. And it's pretty fun experience for those who haven't been there. If they come on out and experience it and check it out, it's a lot of fun.
And tickets are, what did I say, $7 for adults. You can get them at the gate, right?
Yep, $7 for adults. Youth 11 to 17, it's $4, 10 and under free. However, this weekend coming up, it's a special event. It's $10 adults, $5 for youth 11 to 17. And those tickets are good for all three games.
And those are the games down at Olivet College or at Olivet High School?
Olivet College.
Olivet College. Okay, well, Robert Huntoon, have a great season. I'm going to try to get out to one of those games, and I'll look you up and say hi when I'm there.
I appreciate it.
Okay, that's Robert Huntoon from the Capital City Stealth. They have all of the information about their team and the schedule, the home games, when they're playing, and all that is available online. I'll try to get that. I should not have hung up on Mr. Huntoon and gotten his website address. I'll see if I can find that here. But it sounds like an interesting situation here. CapitalCityStealth.com. That's their website. You can check out everything about the team, check out their schedule and all that by going online to CapitalCityStealth.com. And that's capital with an A, not with an O. And we thank Robert Huntoon for joining us here on Sports Talk 870. We got about 10 minutes left in the show, and we are open lines once again. The phone number is 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR, or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. As I was mentioning before we hooked up with Steve Piotrowski, one of the things that was hot on the news this morning, the situation with Chris Carter, a football analyst for ESPN, played professionally with the Vikings notably, and his statement that it was maybe not uncommon for him to offer bounties to his offensive players against defensive players. And he explained it. I listened to the interview that they did with him on the air. He explained his point of view on that a little bit in that he said it wasn't so much a situation where it was offering large amounts of money to injure a player or to cart a player off the field or whatever. It was more of a survival thing, as going to his offensive lineman and say, look, this guy is dogging me really hard during the game. I need somebody to get me free, you know. And his point of view is that as a receiver, he's got the ball and he's busy looking for the ball, trying to make the catch, complete the catch, hang on to the ball, and then head towards the end zone. And these defensive players are just looking for him and trying to tee off on him. So he's trying to get a little bit of extra help. He explained that maybe it wasn't cash, or maybe it wasn't huge amounts of cash, or maybe it was that, hey, if you guys have my back during the game, I'll take you out for dinner afterwards, or I'll make sure that your favorite beverage is stocked in your locker after the game, that you know, you've got three extra bottles of Gatorade or whatever in your locker at the end of the game. So a little bit different situation than what we're talking about with the Saints. The scandal going on down there about the bounties with price ranges for, you know, you get this much if you injure him and knock him out of the game, or this much more if he has to be helped off the field, or this much more if he can't come back to the game. So a little bit different situation. And Chris Carter seemed to think that, or he said that, you know, this is something that goes on all over the place. It's common for something like that to go on. Does that affect the way that you look at the Saints scandal? Does that affect the way that you look at NFL football? You can call me up and express your opinion here in the final few minutes of the show. 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. Or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. So, you know, that's one thing that that I'm curious about, to hear what the listenership thinks of on that situation. The other one, Josh Hamilton. Boy, what a job Josh Hamilton did last night with four home runs and a double in one game. 18 total bases, sets an American League record. The guy is just flat out good. And not only at the plate, too. You know, this is a guy that you watch him play in the outfield. For a guy his size, I mean, he's a big guy. He's a big, burly guy. And he still has the speed to play in the outfield, even with his size. It's almost a freak of nature type thing for Josh Hamilton out there. And it just brings to mind all of the issues that he's had with substance abuse in his career and all of the time that he's missed from the game with his substance abuse issues and his suspensions and all that. And just imagine what kind of career numbers a guy of his talent could be looking at over the course of a career if he hadn't had all those issues and hadn't missed all that time from the game. If you'd like to weigh in on that topic, give us a call at 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. Or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. Or if there's any other topic that you want to bring up, anything that's been bugging you lately, or just a curiosity that you want to bring up. I know We talked a little bit earlier about Brandon Inge and the pseudo resurgence that he's having in Oakland, and I can't help but think of the similarity between what's going on or what went on with Brandon Inge and what's going on currently with Ryan Rayburn with the Detroit Tigers. And I know that there is one radio host out there who shall remain nameless who has been very vocal about his desire for the Tigers to cut their ties with Ryan Rayburn. And, you know, what do you think of that? Where do you fall on that argument? Personally, I see what Jim Leyland's trying to do with Ryan Rayburn. This is a guy who has put up numbers in the past. He's not a great average guy, but he's a solid average guy, and he's got some pop in his bat. And right now he's struggling. So a very wise baseball guy told me once, how do you get yourself out of a funk in baseball, whether it's a pitcher trying to get out of a jam or whether it's a hitter who's struggling at the plate? How do you get that player out of that funk and back to where you know he can perform? Well, he has to do it on the field. You can't do it strictly in the batting cage. You can't do it strictly in practice. You have to experience it. A pitcher has to pitch out of a jam to learn how to pitch out of a jam. A player who's struggling at the plate has to face live pitching in order to get himself out of that funk. There's plenty of work that can be done in the batting cage, but when push comes to shove, you have to see live pitching. You have to see the fastball with the motion on it. You have to see the curveball with the motion on it. You have to see all of those pitches in order to get yourself out of it. So you have to play a player that is struggling. You can give him some rest, but to play him once and then sit him 3 days and then play him another game and sit him three more days is going to be counterproductive to trying to get him back out of that jam. So the host that can be heard locally out of another city who has been critical of the Tigers management for playing Ryan Rayburn, I would that's how I would respond to him and say, you know, you can't get yourself out of the jam until you work your way out of the jam facing live pitching. So, if you want to call in and weigh in on that, we got a couple of minutes left here. We could take your call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-7870 is the number. Well, we're just about out of time today. I do want to thank our friends Steve Petrowski and Robert Huntoon for checking in today. And again, Spartan baseball will be in action on campus this afternoon. The baseball team taking on Toledo at 3:05 over at McLean Stadium. Busy schedule for baseball here over the next few days. They'll play today against Toledo. They take tomorrow off and then open up a three-game home series against Iowa Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday at 3:05, Saturday at 1:05, and Sunday at 1:05 as well. Then on Tuesday, they head to Detroit to take on Central Michigan University, and then they come back for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday against Penn State. And that's the end of the regular season for Michigan State University. Next week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday against the Nittany Lions, 3:05 p.m. Thursday and Friday, and then noon on Saturday. That game will be televised by Big Ten Network, but definitely come on out to McLean Stadium and support them. Softball team will be in action this weekend as well. Jackie Joseph's crew struggling through a difficult season, but come on out and support them. They'll be playing Friday at 5 o'clock and then a doubleheader on Saturday afternoon as well. So hopefully we'll see you there. My thanks again to Aaron Young behind the glass for keeping things going and to everyone for listening once again today. You've been listening to radio station WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 on AM 870. Come back and join Rico Cooney tomorrow. Have yourself a safe and pleasant evening. Hear from you then later on 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.